Welcome to episode 252 of the official GunnaGeek.com show. This week, we talk about an HBO Watchmen series, how the private space sector is slipping, and a bunch of changes to Twitch Prime. Plus, Chris loves himself some tube socks. This and more in this week's show.
I'm Jamie, a.k.a. Scumboy.
I'm Andrew Walsh, a.k.a. Bat Phantom.
I'm Kevin, a.k.a. Neon Nazgul from the Operation Pug Podcast.
A proud member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the show you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual host.
Check out all the podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2,
1.
This is the official GunnaGeek.com show. Here we're a bunch of geeks talking about geeky things. Each week we run down the latest news and happenings in the world of geek. These are your hosts for the show, Steven.
But what if I'm in the mood for a T-Swift story?
Chris.
I've heard the X is going to give it to you.
And SP.
That's how we roll on Gunna Geek on Monday night. We get crazy!
Gunna Geek Productions presents the official GunnaGeek.com show.
Hello and welcome to an all-new episode of the official GunnaGeek.com show. I am Stephen John Drew, and with me, of course, is Chris Farrell.
Hidey-ho, neighborino.
And I am pleased to say that I can go to sleep now in comfort because Stargate Pioneer is back! Woohoo!
It feels so good to be back, guys. Oh my gosh. This was just a nasty couple of weeks. We're going to talk a little bit about it later on, but I'm glad to be back. Things are starting to normalize, but I'm good enough to be back for tonight. So that's great. And it's awesome because today is the 41st anniversary of the Voyager 2 space probe. So it's so fitting that I'm here.
42 years since Star Trek Voyager started?
41 years that...
41 years since Star Trek Voyager started?
No, Voyager 2 space probe from NASA.
Star Trek Voyager is going to launch in 41 years from now?
No. This is the Vega probe, Steven.
Oh, Vega! Why didn't you just say so?
Because apparently I didn't think I needed to, but now I know I did. So
yes,
those of you that have seen the Star Trek movie, the original Star Trek movie, you know what we're talking about. It was a hyphenated sort of hybrid probe that aliens put together called Vega from a Voyager probe. So there you go.
Well, congratulations, Stargate Pioneer, on launching that 41 years ago.
I challenge anyone to stay awake for that boring, boring movie. God, it's bad.
There's a lot of bad ones.
It's bad.
At least it's a slightly different, I think it's better than 2001. So that's the beginning and end of 2001 is about the same.
Nah, man, Wrath of Khan, that's where it's at. That's where they figured
it out. Yeah.
Wait, so Vega launched in 2001, which was 41 years ago? I'm confused.
Oh, my head.
You just confused all our listeners.
Well, let's go ahead and move on to the news. Here we go. All right, let's go ahead and kick this off with some news about The Watchmen. That's right. If you own yourself a watch and you've got more than one of them, and so you give it to another guy, then there's a few men, and thus you are the Watchmen. Is that right, Chris?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So if we confused you to open the show, I'm confused now as I see this news that HBO is going forward with an adaptation of the classic graphic novel Watchmen. They ordered a pilot episode last year, and they have now picked up the show for a full season, which will debut in 2019. Why am I scratching my head a little bit? Well, because Alan Moore, the who the internet proclaims as a wizard of comics because he looks like an angry wizard, pretty much said that his story was supposed to be unfilmable, and he specifically designed the comics that these are based off of to play to the medium strengths of, you know, crazy superheroic things that you can't recreate on screen. And now they're doing it as a TV show, and I'm kind of scratching my head going, well, he did a movie with Zack Snyder and it was okay, but who's really asking for a Watchmen TV show? It's not me. it was announced. I come, okay, that's cool. They announced the cast and they've got a good cast. Regina King's going to be in it. Jeremy Irons, Tim Blake Nelson, folks like that. But I just don't care. Have we hit the point of super saturation of comic book stuff that I just can't care that one of these seminal comic book series is coming as a TV show? And I'm just like, am I that jaded now, guys?
You're like, what?
Well, it probably doesn't help that Damon Lindelof's the showrunner too. So that kind of turns me off a little bit as well.
I've got the Blu-ray. I've got the graphic novel actually about 4 feet behind me to my right back there. I have not actually read the whole thing. I have not seen the movie front to back ever. I am just not interested in this.
Are you sure you're not interested, or do you just think you're not interested?
I'm pretty sure I'm not interested. Look, guys, the amount of movies, comic book movies that I have disapproved of the last few years, you really think I'm going to approve of this?
That's true. That's a fair point. Absolutely. Okay, so I actually agree. I think this is surprising news given all of the backstory with Buddy. Well, I'm not going to say his name. He's so angry all the time. But
Alan Moore?
No, I don't want to say his name. He's so angry all the time. But seriously, I'm surprised to see this, but I guess, you know, HBO makes money, so they pay money.
They're investing in the wrong property.
But remember, Alan Moore's the guy that didn't want to get name credited in the movies that were made on his products. Like, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen's an adaptation of one of his books. He didn't even want to be credited. He's like, this is terrible. I don't want anything to do with it. He was pretty much opposed to the movie Watchmen taking place. I can't imagine that Alan Moore is like, oh boy, HBO is going to make a TV show out of my series. What? No.
There's so many other good properties out there that they could get a hold of. Saga, for instance. And that's just one. Invincible, there's another. I mean, there's so many other good properties that are available right now. And they chose this one?
Invincible's already booked. Someone's got that. I think it was Amazon
Just giving that as an example. I mean, there's tons of other properties out there that they could go for. And they're going for Watch. Probably just for name recognition.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's good business sense for them.
Yeah, name recognition's part of it. Because one of the most iconic and one of the most talked about comics that everyone says when you're getting into it, oh, you have to read it because it's so groundbreaking, is Watchmen. And it's a good read. It's really weird. It's really twisted. But it's a good read, and it goes to show that comics aren't just illustrated superheroes doing random weird stuff being heroes. These are people that have problems. They're really effed up in the head, and the Watchmen book is good. It's dark. Zack Snyder's adaptation, it's not terrible, but there's parts of it he took out, probably to make it more film-friendly, that I feel like should be there. Like, the ending of the movie is different than the ending of the book. There's different things that happen.
I'm just going to go ahead and say that the big CGI dong was a little bit awkward.
Well, it was just exactly like what they had in the comic, though. I mean, you had the CGI, you had the big dong throughout the comic, too, Steven.
I know. I'm not talking about the fact that there was a big dong. I was talking about the fact that it didn't look right. It was, yeah, I've seen a lot of dongs in my day. I mean, what?
I was afraid of that going that way.
It's just, yeah, let's move on.
All right, well, let's move on from that and find out, SP, why exactly are your privates slipping to 2019?
Private space taxis, not my privates.
Well, as the secret...
This is a very different headline.
As the secret director of SNASA, I count all science and space stuff as yours, so thus, these are your privates, your private companies.
First rule about SNASA is we don't talk about SNASA, but we are going to talk about the crewed spaceships, not like cruel.
Hold on. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Did we just hear that SP's privates are crewed?
The private spaceships will have humans in them. It's called crewed. Okay. So SpaceX and Boeing are both on contract to develop crewed actual space capsules that will taxi astronauts back and forth to the International Space Station or low Earth orbit or wherever it is when they finally get going. But according to a new schedule that NASA released back on August 2nd, it's not going to be for another year. So before the announcement, NASA had officially planned for both SpaceX Crew Dragon, that's what it's called, Crew Dragon, and Boeing's CST-100 Starliner to fly uncrewed flight tests of their capsules this year in 2018. Now, Boeing was scheduled to launch its first crewed test mission in November 2018 with SpaceX equivalent flight coming the next month. Now, however, SpaceX uncrewed flight is scheduled for November 2018 and its crewed successor for April 2019. And that just slightly edges them now in front of Boeing's planned launches. Now, because Boeing's uncrewed flight test is targeted for late 2018, early 2019, and the crewed debut is planned for somewhere in the mid-2019. And that news from NASA follows after Boeing announced on August 1st that it would delay the launches, which came in the wake of recent troubles with its launch abort engines during a static fire test. So this is developmental delays for the Boeing capsule. Less than a month ago, a government report also raised concerns that the slow progress of the commercial human spaceflight systems would leave U.S. astronauts stranded on Earth without a way to reach the International Space Station. And NASA astronauts, by the way, if you haven't been counting on this, have relied on the Russian Soyuz spacecraft to get to and from the International Space Station since the retirement of the space shuttle fleet in 2011.
You know, I gotta say that I'm agreeing with Suncast here in the chat. By the way, if you do not know this, we actually stream our show live when we record it on Mondays at 8:45 p.m. Eastern time at www.geeks.live. So if you ever want to check us out live as we record, we encourage you to do so. And in the chat today, we got Suncast, and he goes, "Sometimes I wonder how we ever got to the moon."
Duct tape.
It was part of it. Yeah, duct tape and just pure power. And it's a wonder why we didn't lose more humans in that process. We did lose some in the Apollo 1 capsule fire. There were other astronauts that we lost along the way, but it is a dangerous thing even back then. And one of the reasons we haven't gone back is because we needed to make it safer, which has taken us this long to get to that point, and because we needed to do it cheaper. And it's also taken us this long to get to quasi that point. And SpaceX and its reusability is part of it.
Let me just hypothesize, by the way, that we didn't actually get to the moon, that it was all faked. I know that's an original theory heard here first on the GunnaGeek.com show.
Right. I'm going to dignify that with a response.
While we're talking about the crewed space flights and things like that, SP, did you see the demonstration that SpaceX gave of their crew capsules and how they're going to perform training with folks? It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, I did. They've been blitzing the media all year long. They just recently landed another first stage on the recovery ship and then brought it back in. Elon's just over the moon, literally, with
all the successes.
Yeah, with all the successes that he's had this year. There is always the possibility that something bad's going to happen, but so far he's been riding the wave of success. So I just hope it keeps up for him. And Boeing and NASA, for its part, they are chugging along, developing how they always have. And as you can see here, they're falling behind.
Yeah. You know, it's surprising to see companies start to fall behind like this because it's not what you would anticipate from the idea of privatization, essentially, of the space sector, right? This is something that you see with all so many other elements of privatization. You know, look at the vehicle industry, right? They're always fighting to get the next thing out. And yet here you've got something completely different where it's like one or two companies are dominating and everybody else is just falling behind. Like it's opposite of what you would expect.
Well, if you take a look at the airline industry, which is almost a direct comparison, they've also been suffering from developmental delays just because these airplanes now, like the Boeing 787 and the Airbus 380, they're just so complex that they run into issues and the development gets streamed out and they might have accidents because of new technology that's put in there, just like we did with the space shuttle. Just like we're probably going to happen with the Falcon 9s and the SLS system that NASA is putting together. So it's not completely without history or relevance to other industries.
That's a fair comparison. I didn't think about that. But I want to see Star Trek. That's what I want. I want Star Trek in real life. And we're not going to get it with how slow we're going.
Just have your brother 3D printed. I'm sure it'll get out tomorrow.
Just right. Freeze yourself, Steven. Go and sit in your freezer and eventually you'll be cryogenically frozen and we'll have someone thaw you out here in about 200 years and you can go fly on the Enterprise.
Sweet. Can I actually, you know what? I want Planet Express instead.
Planet Express? Well, you got to wait like a little less than 1,000 years for that.
That's okay.
You got to get to year 3,000.
I miss Futurama. Me so too. I've been watching commercials for it while I watch Killjoys on Sci-Fi and they're having Futurama reruns. And yeah, I miss that series.
All right. Well, I'll start my job as a pizza delivery driver any day now. All right. I'm going to actually have to probably take up a job as a pizza delivery boy to be able to afford the new essentially version of Twitch Prime, because like they're kind of doing this weird renaming thing that's really convoluted. So what's happening, and for those of you who are not familiar with Twitch Prime, it's essentially an added benefit to the service called Twitch. Twitch is a streaming platform. It's actually something that for a while was just gaming streaming, but now it's expanded on there. We actually have a network member on the Gunna Geek Network. I'm trying to think of what their name is, but they actually stream their show every week on Twitch.
Starling Tribune.
No, not Starling Tribune.
Is it Pop X?
It might be Pop. Is it? No, it's All Things Good Nerdy with that Chris Farrell guy. That's what it is. That's
what
right.
What a hack.
I know. What a hack
that guy is.
So for a while, they have given Amazon Prime members, because Amazon does own Twitch, they've given Amazon Prime members a included subscription to this Twitch Prime, which is actually, I believe, a service you can individually pay for if you don't actually have Amazon Prime.
Yes, sir.
So you get benefits with this Twitch Prime. Couple key ones are you get a 20% discount off of pre-orders of games. Pretty reasonable. As well, as we all know, we love ads, but sometimes in life, we just need a break from them, right? You know, it's like you go to the fair and you have fun. You go to 3 fairs in a row, you need a break from the fairs. It's like that, but with ads, because you just see the ads and you enjoy them so... What?
How could you ever get tired of the fair? You have all those funnel cones, cheese curds, rides that you might break at any given moment and hurtle you to your death.
Yeah,
I mean, certain how could you get bored of that?
Because of the fact that you're like literally dying every time you eat those cheese curds. So you, anyways, putting the cheese curds aside, it's like that. So you enjoy ads so much, and with Twitch Prime, you get a little break from the ads, so you don't have ads anymore. Well, guess what? They have announced today on Monday, August 20th, 2018, that when subscriptions renew after a certain date in September, that you are going to no longer get all of those benefits. That's right. If your Prime membership renews after September 14th, or when it renews after September 14th, you will no longer get the ad-free experience. You'll go back to having ads at that point. As well, instead of getting a 20% discount on pre-order games, there are some titles, and I believe it's many titles, but I'm not going to go that far as to confirm that, that will get a $10 credit towards a future purchase. So if you're buying less expensive games, that'll actually work out more or less the same. Obviously, you have to pay the $10 up front, but the next time you have a credit sitting there. But if you buy lots of expensive games, which you can buy, $100 plus games, then it's not going to work out to be as good. Now, where I was going with this sort of weird affordability thing at the beginning of my little introduction here was the fact that you will now have the opportunity to buy not a Twitch Prime membership, but if you have a Twitch Prime membership, you can buy a Turbo membership. If you want to have that break, again, you know, you see ad fatigue, you want to have that break from the ads, for $9 a month, you can get a Turbo membership to get an ad-free Twitch experience. How convoluted is that?
They just want their money.
I get the reason why. They've actually cited the following. They've said, Advertising is an important source of support for the creators who make Twitch possible. This change will strengthen and expand that advertising opportunities for creators so they can get more support for their viewers doing what they love. If we look at YouTube, which is arguably one of the biggest streaming competitors right now to Twitch, because I don't think Mixer's there yet, that's Microsoft service, there's been so much creator backlash there, right? So if Twitch can come in now and then go, hey, guess what? We're going to pay you more. Then it's just a check in the checkboxes to entice creators to come. So I get why they're doing that, but from a consumer experience, it's less.
It's different content. Twitch is more about the live experience. Yes, you can do live stuff on YouTube, but if I want to watch someone play games or if I want to watch a web show, more often than not, I'm going to Twitch for that experience because that's built up for that. Whereas I catch replays or things like that on YouTube at a later date. So they're similar, but not quite, if that makes sense.
YouTube has started to go to creators for their paywall services. Now, it's not all creators. So like us, we wouldn't qualify, but they're big boys that get tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of views per video. They're starting to see that sort of monetization come out to them. And it's almost like Patreon for YouTube, but apparently the bigger creators on YouTube, they don't know what Patreon is. They haven't used it. So they would prefer to keep everything underneath the YouTube umbrella because that's where they're getting all their money from anyway. So YouTube is starting to cater for that. And I'm not sure what they're charging or what they will charge, but I'm guessing it's going to be less than $9 a month for membership.
Guys, YouTube already has ad-free experience. It's $10 a month.
Yeah, and
it's the same price basically as Twitch Prime. It's YouTube TV. What'd they rename it to? It used to be YouTube Red. Now it's like under YouTube Music or whatever, or YouTube Premium. Yeah, so it's not unheard of. And when you go and compare the services here, people aren't buying Twitch Prime just by itself in most cases. Most people are getting it because they have Amazon Prime already. And they're getting it because they get some free stuff for games from time to time. Like, I got free DLC for the last South Park game. I've gotten free DLC for some PC games. And you get a free subscription you can use a month to give to one of your creators. That's free money. That's basically giving $5 of Jeff Bezos' money to whatever group you subscribe to. So, like, I subscribe to the Night Attack channel with that. They get $5 a month every time I go and re-up it. So what they're doing there is saying, if you want the ad-free experience, similar to what YouTube does, pay the $10. Fine, that's whatever. The bigger thing, the thing that is more upsetting to me, and maybe because I don't Twitch as much as some people, is the removal of the 20% discount on new game purchases, because that's how I bought all my games, is I bought them from Amazon, because regular editions of games were all 20% off. The writing has been on the wall, though. Amazon UK got rid of the discount completely for games. There's not even a $10 or £10 credit like we're getting here. It's gone completely. So it was going to happen. When you saw Best Buy get rid of their Gamers Club Unlocked program and GameStop get rid of their Elite Pro tier, this was the writing on the wall. We're going away from discounted games to pull people in. And the fact at least I'm getting $10 potentially on select games, is that's okay. But there's a reason why tonight, before we started this show, I looked at the dates and I went, huh, I pre-ordered 7 video games because I went, I can always cancel them if I want, but I'm locked in for my 20% off right now. That's the more interesting piece of it to me, is the change on that tier.
Yeah.
Because I wonder how much money Amazon was losing by subsidizing these 20% cuts on new releases. Because if you're a retailer, I'm not sure there's a ton of profit when you sell a $60 game. What's their share? $5 maybe? So if Amazon takes $12 off a $60 game for me, they're not making much money. They're still potentially losing money with this $10 credit on select games. Not all like it is now, but select.
I'll be honest, we don't have near the pre-order discount up here. I think they've started putting some in for movies and whatnot, but yeah, we don't have anywhere near that. And I was always surprised to hear that they were able to offer that in the US. Now, with that said, it all adds up to the question of, is the membership worth it? Because again, in the States, your guys' membership is more expensive. So I doubt that this is working towards a reduction of membership fees. So it makes it harder to justify $120 a year if you're not getting these couple of benefits.
The bigger thing that'll be interesting to me is how the Twitch Turbo stuff works out. Because I don't think any of us here on this show are the targets for this Twitch Turbo account, because we watch Twitch a couple times a week, potentially, to watch a podcast or to watch someone play video games. We're not people that live on it. There's a lot of people that their form of entertainment when they come home in the evening is, I'm going to fire up Twitch. I'm going to watch some of my favorite web shows that are streaming. I'm going to watch people play Fortnite or PUBG and things like that. And for them, then they'll go, oh, these ads are annoying. Maybe I'll pay for that turbo price. That's why part of the reason why I have YouTube Premium, because I got Google Play Music. It gave me commercial free. And I went, okay, I like this music. But secondarily, I like not having ads on YouTube. I bring up a movie trailer and I don't get a 30-second ad before my 2.5-minute trailer. It's the trailer immediately. So it's more of an inconvenience factor and how long people can put up with it.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it for a little bit. I haven't convinced myself to do it yet, but that whole trailer thing is the exact reason why I've been considering it. And I think the more annoying part of the live stream is going to be the fact that there is so much that can happen with gaming where you miss it, you miss it, and it's very disappointing. And I think that's where the frustrating part is going to be for those people who are a big viewers of gaming live streams, is now they're going to be in the middle of a live stream and then an ad's going to come up. So it's going to be kind of annoying in that sense.
Is that how it works, or is it a pre-roll ad? Because right now the model is it's a pre-roll ad. So it's when you fire up the stream, you get an ad, and then you go into the stream.
I think it's supposed to, I don't know. I read somewhere that said it's mid-stream, and I thought that there was mid-stream ads as it was on longer ones, but I'm not a big Twitch viewer.
There's definitely mid-roll ads on YouTube. I mean, you see them coming up. They've got the little yellow thing on the play bar, so you know it's coming up. It could be an actual ad, or it could be just a flash pop-up on the screen that you can get rid of, but you know an ad's coming.
Facebook is the most egregious offender of in video ads. Exactly halfway through a lot of videos, you get an advertisement coming and you get to watch half the video. They inject a 15-second ad and you go back to the video. And it infuriates me. If I start watching a video on Facebook, I just scroll on, or I find it on YouTube after the fact, because that is ridiculous to interrupt my experience by putting an ad in between something I'm watching. I'm okay with pre-roll. I'm okay with a little pop-up thing on something because I can click out of it. But putting an ad in the middle of something I'm watching, that is a no-go for me. And it's why I do not watch video stuff on Facebook.
Yeah. Well, moving on from one paid thing to another, let's head on to our extra section here while we talk briefly about how there's apparently in the works, Valve might be coming out with their own streaming service. Yes, this is very odd information, but this is the word on the street right now, is that, and this is from VentureBeat, by the way, that Steam DB creator Pavel Djunja, I can't say the last name, but apparently discovered that there was a domain, steam.tv, that had been registered by Valve. And confirmed after checking source code and finding that the company does indeed own the actual security certificate. So there's no content to speak of yet, but it does indicate that there could possibly be a streaming channel of some form coming from Valve.
It'll be gameplay stuff. They've already built some of that into Steam where you can watch people play. My guess is it's a better way to expose people playing games and streaming it, so you can compete with Twitch, Mixer, YouTube Gaming, and things like that. I don't think there's going to be like a Valve original series and things like that.
Why not? You never know. Maybe we could be the original series.
The market's so saturated at this point. There's too many platforms out there. You'd have to have something to really differentiate yourself. And what is it going to be? Half-Life of the series? Okay, people would be interested in it, but is that going to cause someone to pony up the $8 a month? We've talked on this show about how none of us really want to pony up $8 a month for Star Trek. And at least to me, this is not necessarily how culture is. Star Trek's a much bigger deal than Half-Life to me.
Fair
and I
point.
Won't pay the $8 a month.
I think this might be just dedicated to getting streamed games without people having to do like OBS Studio or something like that. So you can just tap the game into the service and then stream it out. So it might be that, to, as you said, to get more name recognition easily so that the players don't have to burden themselves with the background of having to capture it and restream it.
Yeah, no, fair point. And I think that that's probably the case, is it's going to be more like that than the original content, as much as I want that to be my break was on Valve. Darn. Also, a little quick extra point here. For those of you who use WhatsApp, you might be pleased to know that apparently WhatsApp, which Facebook owns, has come to an agreement with Google. Today, Google sent out an email that says, due to a new agreement between WhatsApp and Google, WhatsApp backups will no longer count against Google Drive storage quota. However, any WhatsApp backwards that have not been updated in more than a year will automatically be removed from storage. This policy will go into effect for all users November 12, 2018, though some users may see the quota benefits earlier. To avoid the loss of any backups, we recommend that people manually backup WhatsApp before November 12th. So pretty interesting to see that they came to an agreement, because WhatsApp has for a long time been one of the early players to embrace the idea of just putting the backup to the whole history in Google Drive. And so I think that's great. I think that's an interesting agreement. I'm curious what Google's reasoning is between like coming to an agreement with Facebook, but it is what it is. Benefit for us.
Whatever agreement it is, it's not going to last, because Facebook will put in something that will prevent it from happening. And let's not forget that net neutrality is dead, so there's that to contend with now, too.
That's fair. But I don't know. Chris, do you use WhatsApp?
No, I don't use WhatsApp. No. So it's all Greek to me. I went, okay, that's great, free backups. I already use Google for everything, and it backs up everything on my phone. I don't care.
Yeah. All right, and finally in the extra section here, I believe it was Chris Farrell that put this one in here.
Yes, we've talked about before how Twitter is trying to get in big with streaming sports, streaming all sorts of things, to have people come to Twitter to watch video. And I haven't really been a huge convert. I checked out a couple NFL games when they did it just to see how it worked. It might have been when we were recording these shows at one point in time, just while I had it in a small window, but that's neither here nor there. What is kind of cool right now is Twitter and Adidas are partnering to launch a new series called Friday Night Stripes. It is going to be a live streaming of 8 high school football games on Twitter. This will be nationally ranked teams from California, Nevada, Indiana, Georgia, Florida. It's going to start on September 7th and finish on November 9th. I think it's a pretty cool thing. If you're a high school football player and you get to be like, hey, watch me on Twitter, how cool is that? And you know, I'm kind of apt to check it out. If I'm on Twitter at the time and it goes, hey, watch some football, I might click on it for a few. It's really neat, and they're putting a lot of production value into it, taking commentators that have been doing broadcast and color commentary on NFL and college games and having them run this. It could be pretty cool. If I was a high school student, this would be awesome to me.
Like, these teams that are nationally ranked need any more ego to be stoked. Yeah, let's face it, they're football players. They're all, we're number ones, and they're all competitive. So this is just going to blow up their egos. Even I don't necessarily know if this is really what we want to do with high school sports.
It's already done. It's already on TV. Let's be honest, guys.
I've talked about it before. I have a very different experience up here in Canardia with the whole passion over sports team things. We just don't have it like you do there. However, with that said, I recognize that it happens. And for me, the exciting part of this is the gateway, right? Because this is a very, very good spot to start, because you have the passion over the high school teams. It's insane to me, the passion. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I think that there's a lot of problems with it, but I get that it exists. And I think that if you want this to succeed, you start with something like this. So it starts here. The next thing you know, it's music concerts at high school. It's other things. The reality is, we live in a different world now than we used to. You have parents both working. Sometimes they work offset shifts, and you cannot always have everybody there. So how cool would it be for mom or dad to be away, killing company time, watching it on Twitter? Like, how awesome would that be, right? I think that there's definite potential here. And I really like the idea of, if this is what's going to keep Twitter around, them investing in this sort of live content produced, I think it's cool.
I don't think it's going to do a thing for Twitter's bottom line. I just think it's kind of a cool thing. And I know I played high school sports, not on any highly ranked teams or anything, but I had fun with it. I know that if I was a kid in high school, this would have been cool to me. And if I'm a kid in high school who's wanting to get recruited somewhere to play college, this exposure is awesome. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle the coverage of this, minus the play-by-play and all that. But how do they cover the fact of, well, this kid's getting recruited by so-and-so and things like that? Could be really interesting. I imagine it's going to be very similar to what you see when ESPN picks up one of these games for national broadcast. But I don't know. I thought it was cool. I wanted to share it. It's a weird partnership, but I like it.
Plus, I heard that the Lady Gaga cover artist is going to be doing the halftime show.
Interesting.
There's going to be all of these awesome bands. There's going to be three drones. That's what it'll be. Three drones. Hmm. They can't afford the full spread that she had.
With microphones or just cameras?
I don't know. They're still working it out. And the thing is, the school district can't afford the drones, so it's probably not going to happen. But let's go ahead and move on to SP's special segment that he has, where he's going to tell us why he's hot and how he became unhot. Hint, it wasn't drinking a lot of beer. All right, SP, tell me, why were you so darn hot?
Over the last couple of weeks, I've experienced a cascade of events that no podcaster should have to deal with while they're doing their podcast. And one of which was I was actually taking care of some personal business out of state, and I get this phone call of the air conditioner's not working anymore. Well, did you try to turn it off and turn it on again?
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's not working. Okay, I'll get home as soon as I can. I'll call the repair company and we'll see what happens. And well, turns out that I got home about the same time that the HVAC repair man did. And I was told that there was a catastrophic failure with my air conditioner. So, all right. This starts down a really big path, and we're going to talk about it because it is now geeky and it's neat and it's smart and it's Wi-Fi enabled and all that stuff. But you got to talk about the nuts and the bolts first. And in the past couple of weeks, I've learned way more about HVAC systems than I really cared to know about that isn't related to a spacecraft system. So I had my home built in 2003, and since then, I've just expected everything major that was mechanical just to work. Well, it turns out, and being an engineer, I get it, that these systems actually have a life expectancy. And then also, because they have a life expectancy, they have dramatically improved since my original systems were manufactured 15, 20 years ago. And it's much like the same that you'd find in the auto industry. Your TVs have changed over the last 15 years, or computers. You get bigger efficiencies. You now have the Internet of Things. And now with HVAC systems, you have additional controls available. We'll get to that later. So we had this catastrophic failure. I cannot believe what happened, because all of the companies that I talked about, that I talked to, said, we have never seen this. I had one guy come to my house. He said, I've been doing this for 30 years. This is only the second one that I've seen like this. I was like, wow, I guess somebody doesn't like me. So there was extensive damage to the system. There were parts that were no longer available. MacGyver type solutions to try to get something running is not really going to last that long, since the system was damaged to a certain extent. And it's just going to cost marginally more to replace the unit, to put a new air conditioner in. I mean, you're talking thousands of dollars for a repair, pay a few thousand dollars more, you get a new system with a warranty on it that's going to last longer. So at 15 years, which is the life expectancy from new construction of a HVAC system, it was time to look for a replacement unit for the air conditioner. So this is basically my tale, my journey to replace the central HVAC unit in my home. So here's a little bit of background. My home was a two-story home. It's 3,200 square feet. The original ductwork was installed without zone, so it's just one giant spider web that goes everywhere. The original system was both a central heating and air conditioning unit that was placed in the basement in a storage room and a utility room. It's actually a large room. And so I'm able to store stuff in there, as well as I actually have the central HVAC system. Now, the original furnace was an 80,000 BTU, 80% efficient Linux unit. The original air conditioner was a 3-ton 10 SEER. Now, 10 SEER is basically the efficiency Linux unit. So it was a Linux natural gas and air conditioner unit. Now, the fan was just a dumb fan. And by that, I mean it turned on 100% and it turned off to 0% when one of the systems was running or when I had the fan on or off, but it was all manual control. And the thermostat I had was originally just a digital up and down and you go through the modes, but I replaced that with a 7-day reprogrammable unit. It was not smart. It was not Wi-Fi. I had my eyes out for a Nest thermostat deal and that never materialized at the price that I wanted. So I never actually got one. Now, also because it's such a large home, I don't have zones and I was dealing with this dumb control thermostat unit. The upstairs temperature was a dramatic differential than the first floor, sometimes as much as 15 degrees, maybe 20 degrees. And you felt it as you were actually walking up the stairs that you were going into a different climate. So I also maintained the unit. It wasn't like I didn't maintain it. I maintained the unit. I had regular filter changes and I had maintenance performed on the system twice a year, once for the air conditioner and once for the furnace. So that's the background of what was there. Now, new HVAC efficiency U.S. code requirements took into effect on January 1st, 2015, just 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago. And a new minimum efficiency standards were in three different zones in America. You had the North Zone, the Southeast Zone, and the Southwest Zone. I'm in the Midwest, which is covered by the North Zone. So air conditioners, the efficiency rating is minimal, supposed to be 13 SEER. And remember, I had a 10 SEER system. So that's going to be an increase in efficiency right there. Now, the new minimum for the Southeast and Southwest is 14 SEER. And the Southwest also has an additional efficiency rating that's on top of it called an EER. So if you live in any one of those areas and you had a house built 15 years ago, odds are if you replace it, you're going to replace it with a better efficient system. Now, if you happen to have a heat pump, which is electrical based and it has a outside unit as well, that efficiency is standard nationwide here in 14 SEER. And Stephen, I did not look at Canadian standards and I don't know if they have changed or not, but I know that in America they have definitely changed. So
It really, the bottom line in Canada is we're just looking at the best way to keep our igloo frozen. So that's
fair.
That's what we look for.
Yeah, it's like the rebel base on Hoth. I get it.
Yeah.
So if you dry it out, you get all those wet clothes and yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So I basically knew that if I was going to replace it, I was going to upgrade in terms of efficiency already. So I looked into what's the difference between a heat pump and a natural gas furnace, because if you go heat pump, that's combined with the air conditioner. And I also looked at other things as well. I wasn't interested in putting a boiler in because that would have been major retrofit into my house. I wasn't interested in putting a geothermal in because my yard is just barely or not really big enough to handle a true geothermal system in the order to cool my house off. I'm not burning coal or oil. I'm not going to go into that. So
whoa. Next time, ask Chris to disconnect before you say that. He lives in oil or in coal country.
Chris, how many homes in West Virginia actually heat with coal?
All of them, of course. Come on, it's coal country.
Right. Sure.
Coal is West Virginia, if you've seen the commercials.
So how do you deal with cleaning the coal in your basement so the dust doesn't get on your podcast gear?
Oh, that's a secret. I can't tell you that. It's a trade secret of being a West Virginian.
Mm-hmm. Natural gas, right?
My heater is natural gas, yes. We do have a lot of natural gas wells here, though, too.
Also, the other way to heat my home would be through radiant floor heat. And unfortunately, that also is major modifications to the floor, where at least the flooring has to come up and you put down electrical lines everywhere to heat. And I wasn't interested in doing any of that. So basically, I was down to a heat pump versus natural gas furnace. There's a lot of pros and cons between the two. I mean, operating costs, I've heard, go one way or the other depending on the year. It depends on if electricity is cheaper or more expensive, or natural gas is cheaper or more expensive. You also have the fact that natural gas could poison you or explode versus the heat pump doesn't. But here's the thing, in the upper Midwest here, it gets really cold, and heat pumps generally don't do all that great when it gets really cold out.
No.
So I was not interested in not having a 100% effective solution to my house when I could actually have it.
So SP, I had a heat pump in an old apartment I had here in West Virginia. And in the winter, when it got below freezing by a fair amount, when we got into like the teens, the heat pump would regularly freeze up. So I would have what they called the emergency unit that ran inside, that was pretty much like a small little furnace-based thing that would keep blowing hot air through, but it could not keep up to keep my apartment warm. So it was a matter of waiting for the sun to hit enough to melt some of the ice on my heat pump and hope it spins back up. It was an interesting experience. It was great as long as it wasn't too cold out. It was super energy efficient, super quiet, but for where I live and for where you live, heat pumps are good about 70% of the time when it's cold. That extra 30%, you're going to hate life, is what I learned.
And I wasn't interested in putting myself through that hate of 30%. Although,
good answer.
You know, if
good
I answer. Did have a solar system that I could augment, I would be more interested in it, but I don't have a solar system on my house or a wind generating system on my house. So I had no way to generate that electricity. So I wasn't interested in paying a huge electric bill at the same time. So those are some of the main pluses and minuses. One of the other main pluses of a gas furnace is lifespan. It's going to last longer. It's going to last more towards the 20-year mark versus the 12 or 15-year mark that a heat pump will. So I was just more interested in going for the long-term fix. But that was just the comparisons back and forth. So I was keeping an open mind and waiting for what the solutions were going to come in. So I had several people come over. We'll talk about the quoting process in a little bit, but I looked at different options, and one option was just doing an air conditioner replacement. Now, when doing this, there would be no gain from the new technology, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, high efficient variable speed fan. The furnace would last longer. I mean, it's a gas burning furnace, but it was only 80% efficient. And the quotes just to do the air conditioner unit for the amount of cooling that I wanted to add to the house came into about $5,000 to $7,000 anyway. So if I'm going to spend that much on just the air conditioner for a couple thousand dollars more, I could add a new gas furnace, and I end up with that same temperature differential if I'm just doing the air conditioner unit between the first and second floor. So I was like, maybe not so much once I started looking into the cost and the benefits of a whole system. And I did decide on the natural gas furnace versus the heat pump just because of the really cold winters. Also, putting in a natural gas furnace that's somewhere between 95 and 97% efficiency was going to be either a cost savings over the 15 or 20 years that I'm going to have it, or it's going to be a good selling point versus the 80% solution that I had in the house already. So whether I leave or I stay, it's a benefit.
It makes sense. And you're getting to be a little older now, so you have a lot of natural gas anyways.
Heyo.
Well, yeah, you would know if we had smell-o-vision, but we don't, thank gosh. So the new furnace and the air conditioner together actually is augmented in everything, because you add the new high efficiency variable speed fan. That is a full system advantage because it'll run all the time with a lot less power to it, and it will vary its speed. So when I need a lot of cooling or a lot of heat, it will deliver it in the extreme temperatures. But otherwise, I get to lower my energy bill with a 50% or 80% fan running. The new controller was going to be a new smart or Wi-Fi control system, which was going to not only control the furnace, but other things as well. We'll get to that in a second. So it's not just a Nest controller. It's a full hub for the system. And then if I did everything together, it's one and done which was the most financial advantage because you're getting the discount for doing both of them, as well as, of course, these companies provide financing if you need that. And the financing options on both were a lot more palatable than just the air conditioning unit. Unfortunately, if I decided to do them both together, it was not going to be any time to wait for off-season deals. I needed to have it done and done it now. And I decided to do the full system replacement. And in that decision, I'm getting quotes all along the time. I actually talked to 9 different companies. Wow. And it was, yeah, so I was very interested in getting the best bang for the buck, getting the best technical solution into my house, and really wanted to do the right thing. So I looked at different brands because all these companies represent different brands. I looked at a couple of off brand names, but some of the ones that you might recognize: General Electric, Westinghouse, Rudd, Carrier, Train. And just like everything else, just like phones, for instance, if you're going to buy an iPhone, you're going to pay for that Apple tax. Well, Train and Carrier are two brands where you're going to pay for that name brand recognition. But also, that's where a lot of the deals come and where a lot of the financings come and where a lot of the long-term support comes as well. Because some of these other units, they just stop supporting them after a while because you're not going to need, in my case, I'm not going to need to repair what I got. You're going to want to do a new option. So I also was able to get multiple opinions on the technology that was available. So they could install some version of zoning. They could actually put a second unit in my ceiling, but that would have cost an extra $12,000 in the second floor. They were looking at higher efficiency options with the variable speed fan. That is an increase of what I have right now, or just replace a dumb system like I have right now. So I looked at the different opinions. I looked at the different capabilities. I was looking at what the installation dates were because I needed to have it done. I mean, if you go with a local company, they're going to have a smaller crew. They're going to be able to give you some price breaks, but it's also going to be at least days, if not weeks, during one of these extreme seasons to get somebody into you. And also, some of the local companies might not have necessarily the Better Business Bureau rating because they'll have good experiences and bad experiences. And I was very careful to look at the Better Business Bureau, stuff like Angie's List or Yelp, and then also neighborhood referrals. That was big. And matter of fact, there was one company, the company that I actually had maintaining my system that I really wanted to go with, but they just didn't offer the technological capability that I wanted to. So I decided not to go with them. And that's a great idea right there. You don't necessarily have to have a long-term relationship with your installers. It helps a little bit with the warranty and the warranty work, but you can actually have another company come in and service. And as long as you have a record of that, then you can then be eligible for the warranty. All right. So enough of everything. I decided on a specific system. It was a Train system. I was looking at the best technical capability for the bang for the buck. The quotes that I got for everything were somewhere between 7,000, 10,000. Actually, a couple were 11 and 12,000, but I cut those off because those were extreme options. And the actual package that I went with, which was a 96% efficient furnace, which is known as the Train S9V2. I went with an 18 SEER air conditioner efficiency unit, 3-ton, called the XL18i. I was looking at a variable speed, high efficiency blower, and the smart controller is a Nexia enabled XL824 programmable Wi-Fi enabled thermostat. That's actually a Z-Wave hub. So that is the decision that I went with. It's a great capability right there.
It sounds quite efficient. How much more efficient is it than a 2018 GMC Sierra?
Oh, or I knew this was coming.
Well, see, that has the higher efficiency HVAC system in and of itself, but it's only designed to take care of the cab, not a whole 3,200 square foot house. So it wouldn't do the same job.
Okay. No, that's too bad.
If you ever find yourself in the process of having to do this, which if you own a house and you have an HVAC system, every 15 to 20 years, if you're lucky, to 20 years, you're going to have to do this. So if you have a central HVAC system, you are going to have to plunk down somewhere in the neighborhood of $6,000, $7,000, $10,000, $15,000 to replace your system. This is going to impact your life if you own property. The replacement went great. It was a one-day deal, even with a house as big as mine. I had two guys come in. The experience was very pleasant. They actually shored up all the gaps in the existing ductwork that was actually poor installation from the beginning. And it was, you basically had drafts in the house and you had leaks in the system. And I was given a new high efficiency furnace exhaust, which is now PVC pipe. And it goes out the side of the house versus the stovepipe that goes out the roof, because what the high efficiency does is it takes that initial combustion of the natural gas, and then instead of going up the pipe and losing the 20%, it actually recycles that back into the system and captures that to help heat the house as well. And that's how you get the higher efficiency. Well, then you no longer need to go up through the roof. Matter of fact, you can't, because you have a lot of steam and water vapor, and that cannot actually go up all the way three stories through the roof of my house. So it had to go out the side of the basement, basically. And it looks like a dryer vent out the side of the house, really. And it will exhume steam in the winter. It'll keep warm and it won't ice up, but it'll be steam coming out. So that was installed because of the 18 SEER air conditioner unit, that XL18i. It actually has a reinforced top, so the same failure will not occur. By the way, the failure was estimated that something or someone was actually standing on top of my unit. So I don't have any proof of that at all, but everybody was saying, I've never seen something like this. The only thing I can think of to enable this damage is that somebody was standing on it while it was running and it failed, and it was catastrophic failure. Okay. And now the new system is fortified. I mean, the system is almost as tall as I am. There's no way it's going to fail. I mean, if somebody gets up there, it's got a large I-beam on top. It'll
so it's
actually
like 2.5, 3 feet tall.
Yeah. Three and a half. Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah,
fair.
Yeah. So the new high efficiency variable speed fan runs 100% of the time. It actually has one of the added controls is humidity control. So in the summertime, you can make it 40% humidity. In the wintertime, if I had a humidifier, which I don't on the system, I could make that humidity 60, 70, 80%, or however much of a steam bath I wanted to make my house. Because the fact that the fan runs 100%, that variable between the first and second floor, that temperature went down, the differential from 15 degrees or whatever it was, closer to like 4 to 5 degrees between first and second floor.
Yeah, what a difference.
It is. It's livable upstairs in the summer, and I no longer am considering putting in a second unit up there, although it would still help bring the temperature down a little bit. The new smart controller is incredible. It shows you history of the runtime. It shows you history of what the second stage cooling is, what the first stage cooling is, what the humidity over time. It basically gives you full diagnostic readout per day, a history. And it's great to actually take a look at and see how hard the unit is actually running. And I can control other devices through it. If I get a Z-Wave enabled garage door opener, which I probably will now, that will be controlled through the hub, which now I can control anywhere on my smartphone or mobile device, or log into my account via web page, wherever I am. I can turn the temperature up, turn the temperature down. I can put it in different modes, away mode, home mode, whatever. Like if you forget to close the garage door and I can see it through my security cams, I can, all right, well, I'll just shut it. And that's easy enough. This is not revolutionary stuff, but it's all new to me. So I'm grateful that this is actually going to be mine, at least for now. I'm a little bit worried about 5 years from now, because is Z-Wave going to be around in 5 years? I don't know. So we'll see if I need a new thermostat controller then or not. But it also does the standard stuff. Like it reminds you, hey, dummy, it's time to change the filter. It's been 45 days or 30 days or 60 days or whatever I set it to be. The bottom line is I'm very happy with the solution. I'm looking forward to reduced utility bills out of this. And also, unfortunately, it's enabling a full storage room clean out, which is still ongoing.
I'm sorry.
And I may or may not have piles of stuff outside the door right now.
Well, it sounds like you had quite the decision. It was well thought out. You got enough quotes and everything. And I got to say, like, from my perspective, when you were messaging Chris and I about this and whatnot, you were kind of keeping us informed of what was going on. It was kind of interesting to see the way that the smart things came into your factor, right? Like, originally you had said that you weren't super concerned about it. And then as you were messaging, you started to mention them a little bit more. And I think you're going to find that that was the right decision, was to have something smart. I think you would regret that if you didn't in a few years, because as someone who has adopted some smart things in my home that I've questioned, did I really need that? I.e. my irrigation system that I spoke about a while ago. It's amazing when you find actual practical uses for these things. And I think that if I had an HVAC system, I would definitely have something smart on it, because I think there'd be some really good opportunities. Like, if all of a sudden, you know, there's a storm that comes in and you're away and you know that the temperatures switch suddenly and you need to make an adjustment, I think that's going to be handy for you. You had mentioned, though, didn't you say that there is a integration with a certain lovely lady that we all like?
That's right. Forgot to mention that. I did integrate it with the Amazon Home device. So now I can actually change the temperature in the house. I can do all the changes that I need. If I need to change modes, I'll change that. And I have not tried to change the humidity level yet, but that's something there. But yeah, you can connect it to whatever home device that you have, whether it's Amazon, Google, or Apple, and it will interface. And that is awesome as well. The part about if you need to change it when you're away, this has happened to me before. Like, I am away on business, and it's one of those seasons where you want heat at the night, and the day it gets just outrageously hot. And this is actually coming up pretty soon for me. So if I'm away in, like, say, October or November, it could be 80 here during the day, but at night it could get down to like 30. And then I'm able to actually go in, change it from cooling to heating or vice versa, and make sure that the people that are left here are just comfortable and livable.
Plus, I'm sure it'll be super fun when you turn that up without them knowing and make them constantly go turn it down, wait for it to get turned down, turn it back up. Just, you know, it'd be fun.
I've already done it.
Well, thanks for sharing that story. And we can't wait to hear more information on this in the future, because I'm sure there's all sorts of other things you're going to discover with the smart side of things. And we want you to report back, because for those of you who are not in our live chat room, which again is on Mondays at 8:45 p.m. Eastern time, we got a lot of people talking about how they had to replace their HVAC units in the recent years. And so this is definitely a thing that hits close to home with many, many people. So thank you for sharing, Stargate Pioneer.
Well, thank you very much. And if other people have stories that they want to tell, or different tidbits of their process that I did not run into or that I did not cover, we would be glad to get their feedback, and we'll talk about it on a future episode of Gonna Geek.
Absolutely. By the way, speaking of Gonna Geek, we're part of the Gonna Geek Network, and the Gonna Geek Network has a lot of amazing geeky content on there. If you've not checked it out before, you should please do that. Head on over to GonnaGeekNetwork.com. Check out all of the shows there. We've got a lot of really, really fun shows, and occasionally we like to read what we call a promo read on this show here. However, today we are not going to do that, because I want to say that we have a brand new member to the Gonna Geek Network. That's right. We have the Dad IO podcast. If you want to check them out at GonnaGeekNetwork.com, you should. It's a brand new member to the Gonna Geek Network. And I would like to say welcome to Dad IO, to this crazy dysfunctional family. I swear that Chris only needs to get locked up like twice a year. And then we communal bail money, of course.
Guys, we put the fun in dysfunctional here. That's all there is to it.
I told you I wasn't going to be contributing your bail money this year, Chris.
That's okay. I know you guys hate me. You won't help me pay for bail money. I understand.
You have a fiance now. She can do that.
She works for the state. She can't do that.
She can pull strings, though. She works for the government.
Yeah.
All right, well, on that note, let's just take a moment here to plug and promote a couple of things here. SP, you made yourself available on a couple of different places recently, didn't you?
I did. So the last podcast that I actually recorded before my air conditioning went out was an episode of The Basement. Now, this is a podcast that's looking into the Ready Player One novel. Of course, there's the Ready Player One movie as well. And they're on chapter 6 right now. And they had to do it in 6 different parts. And they had me on for part 1. I was on there with Jeremy from Transmissions Podcast. Albert, of course, is the main host. We talked about authors like Terry Brooks, Jack Vance, Kurt Vonnegut. We talked about The Police and Bon Jovi. We discussed the movie Real Genius. If you haven't seen that movie, you probably should go out and see it. It's a fun watch. We talked about the directors, producers, James Cameron and Steven Spielberg. I watched all 45 episodes of The Greatest American Hero in preparation for this. And we talked about the tech in Star Trek, the original series, not the Next Generations. Jeremy talked a lot about GoBots and the Transformers. And you can find that wherever you can find podcasts. That's The Basement, episode 0006, part 1. I had the very big privilege to be the warm-up, the opening act for the closing keynote, which was Bandrew Scott, for the 2018 Part 2 Sunshine Summit by Heather Welsh. And it was a real fun time. And you can actually go to our YouTube channel now and see that episode. So, or you can go to the Sunshine Summit or the sunpowercuts.com/Sunshine Summit 2018 and find all of the great sessions that occurred. So this was Heather's first year of her podversary. So that is how she chose to celebrate.
Someone chose to spend their anniversary with you. I thought not even your wife did that.
Podversary.
Okay,
podversary.
Fair enough. Chris, do you have anything that you would like to plug or promote?
So what I'd point out is Steven's talked a lot about Geeks.live as we do. This is where we stream live for the GunnaGeek.com show, but it is not the only show that uses Geeks.live. If you're there right now, scroll down to the bottom of the page. You see a calendar of all of the live shows that you can catch over on Geeks.live. So if you've enjoyed the GunnaGeek.com show today, please come back some other day for one of the other shows on there. Feel free to join in the chat room and tell them the Gunna Geek show sent you.
Awesome. And I'm just going to take a moment to plug the other show that I do. It's Better Podcasting. It's pretty much a solo show that I do. I have someone who comes in occasionally named Stargate Pioneer and helps me a little bit. And we just put out an episode. I put out an episode on podcast organization, but I've got an exciting one coming up this coming week on web presence. So if you're into podcasting, if you want to hear us talk about podcasting, hear me talk about podcasting, check that out at betterpodcasting.com, which of course takes you right over to the Gunna Geek Network because we love the Gunna Geek Network. Yay!
Did you just say you're giving people presents from the web? I would like one of those Bluetooth sous vide immersion circulator thingies if you're getting people presents from the web.
No, I think by presents from the web, he's talking about the bad presents, kind of like viruses.
Oh, I don't like those, Steven. I don't want that. Come on, I want good presents.
Or tube socks. Tube socks.
No, I don't want tube socks. They're too long and uncomfortable.
Socks are in, man. Socks are in. Why don't
tube
you have
socks
any?
Are dumb. Well, give me my ankle socks. I love them.
On the note of tube socks, for episode 252 of the official GunnaGeek.com show, I'm Steven John Drew saying I gotta get me some tube socks. Oh, and by the way, we won't have a show next week.
Someone gave me a sock, so I'm Chris Farrell, and I'm free now.
I'm SP, and I paid a lot of money, but I'm a lot cooler now.
Bye.
Thanks for checking out another episode of the official GunnaGeek.com show. If you like the show, please give us a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts or a thumbs up on YouTube. You can always join us for our live recording sessions, which stream Mondays at 8:45 p.m. Eastern at www.geeks.live. And remember, you can find our full back catalog at gunnageek.com/show. If you're itching for more geeky content, check out other shows on gunnageeknetwork.com. Voice work was by Emily Prokop of the Story Behind podcast. That's it for this episode. We hope to see you back again next week.